Welcome to each of you to what I believe will be an inspiring evening. I have some announcements that I'll make, but first of all, let me introduce our guest, Dr. Abulash, who is a physician, a Palestinian, who has spent much of his career working in Israeli hospitals, but has served all around the world and is currently at the University of Toronto as a professor of public health. He was born in Gaza, raised as a refugee in refugee camps, knows poverty, was encouraged by his family to get an education. He knows the challenges of living in very, very difficult circumstances. His book is one you want to read, and it will be available at the back, and he will be willing to sign it, I believe. I'm trying to figure out how to get you to sign a Kindle edition. I read it over the weekend, and it's a powerful book. And he will share some of his story this evening. But the most compelling part of his story is the loss of his three daughters and a niece. Now, nearly 6 years ago, is that right? 5 years ago. Six, I believe. And he tells that story in this book, as well as many, many other stories about his life experiences and his decision not to hate. And the title of his book is I Shall Not Hate. It is the journey on the road to peace and human dignity. And some of us have had the opportunity to hear him several times today, and I know that it is a compelling story that all of us will appreciate very, very much. So we will invite him to speak to us on the theme of forgiveness to compassion. After his presentation, there will be time for some Q&A. And we encourage you to do the questions, and he will provide the answers, as opposed to us making speeches this evening. So as you formulate your questions, feel free to do that. And following the meeting, as I said, you'll be able to find books back there and purchase them and have him sign them. So please join me in welcoming Dr. Abulash.
Good evening. First, I will start by thanking all of you, because the one who is not thankful to people is not thankful to God. I thank all of those, Daryl and others, who organized this event to bring me to connect with you and to share. And I'm coming to speak to you with open heart, open mind, eyes, and I'm sure you all are coming with the same goodwill, open heart, mind, eyes, and ears. What can we take with us from this meeting, because our life, it has a purpose. We need to have a sense of purpose. Time is precious, and we are accountable to our time, because in the day of judgment, we will be judged about three things: your education, what did you do with it? You kept it in your mind or you shared it with others. Your time. You wasted it or you used it. Time is the sword. It has double edge. If you didn't cut it, it will cut you. And the third is your money. From where did you get it and what did you do with it? So we need to use our time in an efficient way. And once you mentioned about my daughters, it's about 6 years, 16th of January 2015 will be 6 years. And 16, the number 16 is printed in my mind. It's not 6 years for me. Even when it was 5 years, so I wrote 16th of January 2014, 5 years have passed. 5 years have passed in a flash. Their cries have not ceased. The cries of pain and hope, their heart, wrenching cries and pain, never leave me or my memory. 5 years have passed. Where is Bisan? My eldest daughter, who was 20 years old when she was killed. Where is Mayar, who was 15? Where is Aya, now, who was 14? Where is Noor, my niece, who was 17? Five flowers they drank from the well of learning that you are drinking here, and grew up with morals and values, and thrived on tolerant Islam. They drank and slept on Palestine's soil that they loved. You are with the prophets and saints, martyrs and righteous people. Your pure blood, you were my companions and my comrades in my loneliness, my friends in my calamity, and my daughters in loving me. I miss you each and every second, and long and search for you. Your names don't leave my side. Bisan, with the beginning of every morning. Mayar, with the cry of each child. Aya, each time I hear a verse from the Quran, and each time the church builds chime, and Noor with Dawn's first light. The promise that I had taken upon myself since day one is to keep your names and spirit alive, not to forget you so long as there is life on this earth. We will not despair of God's mercy, nor will despair find us, and we shall meet, God willing. I don't want to be remembered with my daughters, because they move with me, and they live with me, and I am living for them. So I am coming to speak to you as a Palestinian refugee, as a father, as a doctor and educator. But most important, it's in this moment that each of us to feel his humanity. I am coming to speak to you as a human in this world, as a Palestinian refugee. And we need all of the time to take this word and not to pass by it. It means a lot. What made me to be a refugee and what kind of life the refugee is living and running. Refuge that I don't accept it to anyone on earth. It takes the dignity of humanity. When you become a refugee, homeless, waiting for humanitarian aids, and we need to feel angry about it. I felt it many times. When I was born in refugee camps, when even in 1970, when our house was demolished by the Israeli Defense Forces, it was a small house in the camp. But for me, it's a palace. It was just a house to protect us from winter and from the sun. But at least I can say I have a place, and that's what I don't accept it for anyone, to see someone who is homeless and to be a refugee. It reminds me of what did I pass through as a child, as a father, as a person. And we need to stand up for that. But I realized, and our parents, they realized it, that the only hope to get rid of this misery and sometimes to energize you, I want to get rid of it. Our parents who were not educated, they were forced to leave their homeland after living on their land. Now to be refugees, they realized it's through education. Education is the only way, because education is the light which guides us in times of darkness. And we live the darkness, and we need the light to move forward. And the life someone can oppress, can occupy, can deprive, can imprison, can do anything. So for the students, say to you, no one can prevent you from dreaming to be the one you want. I encourage you to dream big. And every big dream starts with the dreamer. I dreamed. I want to get rid of the misery of this life and to go to a university. I wanted to be a medical doctor in order to get a better job. And being the eldest, I carry the responsibility. I have to work hard. Dreams are not just the dreams. You need to be confident. You need to believe in yourself. You need to work hard for it. And life taught me that dreams are close to reality. And nothing is impossible in life. Every dream in life I planned, I succeeded to achieve. The only impossible thing in life I believe in is to return my daughters Bisan, Mayar, Aya, and my niece Noor back to life. But I can keep them alive, and today they are living with us, in your minds, in your hearts, in your souls. From Jabalia camp, to Cairo University, to London University, to Italy, to Belgium, to Harvard. As I said, every dream, every plan, it took time. Because I was scratching on rocks. I wasn't born with a golden spoon. But I am proud of what did I achieve. I am proud of my parents. From nothing, I succeeded to be the one where I am now. And that's the challenge in life. We need to challenge ourselves first, to immunize ourselves, not to give up, to be confident that we can make it and we can be the one we want. So I made it. And my life, the whole of my life, was a war. But I learned that life is what we make it. Always has been, always will be. It's in our hands. We can shape our life the way we want. Not to allow others to make our life. So we can shape it. And when we speak about war, what is war? What is war that we are talking about where Palestinians in the Gaza Strip only within the last 6 years, they endured three destructive wars. My life was a war. I was fighting on a daily basis just to survive. Even till now, I have to fight just to move for tomorrow. And when I have tomorrow, I thank God I have a new day in my life. We as Palestinians, we lost security and safety. And when I travel in this world, the world has to remind me I am different. Yes, I am different. I am different in being determined, in being stronger, not to give up my right to live a free side by side to this world. I am different as a Palestinian in our potential. And that's what is needed. So the war, and how much of war do we see on the screen? Is it the soldier who is going to kill and to be killed, or wounded, or the innocent child, daughter, mother, or old? War, it's about our children, our grandchildren dying before they are fully adults, or being disfigured, wounded, or mentally scarred for life. It's hundreds of thousands of human beings dying years before their time. It's our children seeing their bodies, limbs, a blown of their bodies. It's millions of people separated forever from the ones they loved. War for me and for you, it's a genocide, it's torture, it's a propaganda, it's dishonesty and the slavery of humanity. War is not just to be documented, but to be prevented. Because saving one's life, we save the world. Killing one, you kill the world. We need to zoom in and to see human beings as a human. And there is no cause to justify the killing of any innocent person. There is no cause on earth. During that war in 2008, and even now in 2014, Palestinians were just numbers. Figures, 100, 500, 1,000, 1,400, 2,000. There are numbers. It's shame. It's unethical. It's immoral to see humans as numbers or figures, statistics. These people, they have names. They have faces. They have plans. They have parents. They have hopes. They have dreams. They have life. They have a future. We need to see them and to give them the human face. I will never accept my daughters to be just figures or numbers. And that's why when I saw my daughters killed in front of me, that I don't want anyone on earth to see what did I see. These beautiful, bright girls, if I have 100 of them, I thank God for what he gave me. They were a blessing. They were a big gift as girls. As I was proud of them, their teachers were fighting to have them in their classes. They never succeeded, less than 97% in their schools. Bisan, who was 20, was about to get her BA few months later. In 3 years, to be the first in the university to get it, in 3 years, and she planned to go to do a master in London School of Economics. Mayar, who was 15, who was number one in math in Palestine, who planned to be a medical doctor to follow my path. I was happy at least one of my daughters will follow that human one. Aya, who was 14, who planned to be a journalist or a lawyer, to be the voice of the voiceless. My niece, Noor, who was 17, who planned to be a teacher. These beautiful girls, they became parts, drowning in their blood. I wanted to see them, to recognize them. Where is Bisan? Where is Mayar? Where is Aya? Where is Noor? Mayar was decapitated. But as a believer, as a Muslim with deep faith, I said, God knows, and we don't know. Why I was tested with my daughters? Why I was saved? Because it happened seconds after I left my daughter's room. If I stayed, I would be gone with them and no one would learn about it. I said, God knows. And thanks God, at that moment, it was a bland to be interviewed live by the Israeli TV. So it was broadcasted live when I called the Israeli anchor, and I don't know that he is in the studio at that time. And that's the courage that my friend, the Israeli anchor, he opened the speaker when he heard me to broadcast it live to the world, to open the eyes of the world, of the Israeli public, the international community, about what is happening in this part of the world, to give the human face to the Palestinians. But no one should be killed in order to prove that he or she are human. We are human since we are born. That's why from that moment, I swore to God, I swore to my daughters, I will never rest or relax till I meet them one day, because I believe I will meet them one day with the big gift to them. It's a justice for them and others. And that this tragedy was invested for good, because a tragedy can't be the end of our lives. We can't allow it to control and defeat us. As Einstein said, life is like riding a bicycle. To keep balanced, we must keep moving. I kept moving faster, stronger, more determined, not to give up or forget my daughters. I moved from there, and as a Palestinian, we harbor no desire for revenge, and we don't hate anyone on earth. We are people with potential, hopes, and dreams. We are people who want to succeed and to be free as others. Freedom must not stop at the borders of Palestine. Conflict that we are talking about, conflict, arises when we violate someone's honor and dignity and destroy both their self-esteem and self-respect. What is our expectation from a child who sees his father shooted in front of him and can't do anything? What about parents who are unable to mourn or carry out proper burial rites for the dead, with all the emotional, psychological, and spiritual distress? My daughters were killed. Even for me, someone to ask me, what do you feel? The only thing I feel, I wanted to see them when they were buried. I wasn't able to see my daughters when they were buried. The last minute of seeing the beloved ones, you can't as a Palestinian. I have to be away from my daughters. I was with my daughter, with my niece and the brother who were severely wounded. Even as Palestinians, we can't decide where to be buried. I wanted them to be buried close to their mother, because their mother passed away 4 months before them, 16th of September 2008, of acute leukemia. I wanted them to be close to their mother, as my son said to me at the time of the tragedy, when I looked at my son who was 12, my son Muhammad, what a future is waiting for him? Is he going to be violent, to be crazy, what we call full of hatred, revenge, anger, terrorist? My son wasn't born with that. My son was born with hopes, with humanity. He looked at me and to say to me, while I was crying and screaming, why are you crying and screaming? You must be happy. He said, maybe he doesn't know what is going on. How can I be happy and be sad? Mayar, Aya, and Noor are killed. He said, I know my sisters are killed, but I know that they are happy there. They are with their mom. She asked for them. That's the Palestinian child. Does he deserve the freedom, the respect in this world, and to feel their needs? I saw that war, but at the same time, I saw the hope. I saw the hope as the first Palestinian doctor practicing medicine in an Israeli hospital. I practiced it because I believed in it. I did it from all of my heart. Because medicine and health for me are a human equalizer and destabilizer. When we treat patients, we treat all equally, with respect, with the privacy, not related to name, ethnicity, geography, or background. Medicine and health are the human equalizer and destabilizer, and we need to practice it outside the borders of the hospital. The happiest moment in my life is when I handle the baby to his mother. The cry of the newborn baby is a cry of hope. A new life is coming. No difference between the cry of the newborn Palestinians, Israelis, Jordanians, Americans, or anyone, Muslims, Jewish, Christians, Druze. It's a cry of hope and responsibility. And that's what is needed to practice in this world. We need to give and to believe in it and to promote it. That's why I did it. So we need to ask about our world. And the book I wrote, I Shall Not Hate, because the people, after what happened, they were expecting me to be full of hatred. I say I may have the right to hate, to be blind, to be shut down with anger. We need to be angry about our world. Anger that provokes positive energy in ourselves, not to accept what is happening and to take responsibility and to do something and to act. That's the anger we need, and we are in shortage of anger. But hatred is different. Hatred is a chronic. Chronic disease like cancer, which is destructive to the human being, to the human soul. It paralyzes us. It shuts us down to make us blind. It's a fire and a heavy burden. So if we want to move faster, we need to be lighter, to be stronger, and not to allow hatred to approach us. And when a grandson came to ask his grandfather, where the grandfather wanted to teach his grandson, he said, in each of us, there are two wolves fighting. One of them is love, tolerance, respect, understanding, justice, freedom, good values. And the second is hatred, anger, oppression, bad values. That's what do we have in each of us. So that grandson asked the grandfather, which one will win? The grandfather answered, the one we feed more. So it's in our hands. The antidote of hatred and anger and revenge is success and to be strong. And that's what I learned from my daughter Shada. My daughter Shada, who was 17, and what she experienced in 1 year, mountains can't tolerate that. At the start of the school year, her mother passed away. 4 months later, 3 sisters and 1 niece were killed, and she was severely wounded. She was studying day and night during the war on candles to be one of the top 10 in Palestine in the high school. She was treated in the hospital I am working at in Israel. She spent 4 months. Few days later, with the bandages over her eye and her right hand, she said to me, "If I can't see with my right eye, I have my left. If I can't write with my right hand from tomorrow to bring me papers and pencils to write and to practice with my left hand." As I said, she spent 4 months. She was discharged from the hospital. She lost the sight in one eye. 2 malformed fingers in her right hand, but she didn't lose the direction or the compass. She said, "I have to go back to achieve the plans and the dreams of my sisters." And I didn't expect much from her. She worked hard, and the day we planned to move to Canada, they announced the result. And the high school exam in Palestine, it's a standardized, unified exam for the whole country at the same moment, from the whole curriculum. They don't care what did you pass through. And they announced the result. And she succeeded as nothing happened to her. She succeeded 96%. And what is she doing? And that's the challenge. She took it serious, not laughing. She used her time to be serious and to use her time to challenge many of the men in this world. And that's what is needed. She will graduate from the School of Engineering, University of Toronto, Electrical and Computer Engineering, May 2015. And that's what she proved to this world of our men and young men who are taking it lazy, negligence. They find everything easy for them. That's the challenge. The antidote of hatred and revenge is success and to move forward. And that's what I learned from my daughters. And we need all to learn, in particular from our children, the good ones who are learning and can teach us, who are taking care of what do they have, who are responsible ones, not just wasting their time. The disability is not in the eye. The disability is in the mind, in the goodwill to challenge and to move forward. So she succeeded. And not to underestimate ourselves. Don't say no till you try. That's what is needed in our world. When we speak about justice and peace, justice is needed in this world. This world can endure. But we need a few things. And I liked today to see the center. It starts with justice and peace building. Because you need justice. You can't start peace without justice. And justice means peace. Justice means freedom, equality, respect. So this world can endure with the truth and justice. We need them. Truth is the light. It's the right diagnosis to help us to set up the right treatment for the challenges we are facing. So we need them. But in addition to that, in my life, I am in debt to my mother, my wife, and my daughters. And I fully believe this world can endure with another element. If you go to any country in this world and you want to know about it, about the development and the indicators of development, don't ask about the economic situation. Don't ask about the money, because the money poisons and despoils the people. That's what is needed. The people who are not able to use it, the people who are not valuing it. The indicator is education, the level of education, and women's education and role in that country. That's the indicator of development. The more women are educated and practicing their role, the more that country is developed. So we need to promote that, and I fully believe in it. That's why I want to keep my daughters alive through Daughters for Life Foundation, for education of girls and women from the Middle East, irrelative to their background. Girls who are succeeding from hardship, social, economic, financial hardship. I want to see the plans and the dreams of my daughters fulfilled by these girls. So that's what is needed. Daughters for Life Foundation, a healthy, educated girl and woman will raise a healthy, educated children, husband, family, community, and nation. It's time to invest in education of girls and women. It's the most efficient and effective means for the change. Women are the agent of the change. And we as men and women, we are not competing. We are complementing each other. We are supporting each other. We need to work together to build our world. The great Lebanese poet Khalil Gibran once said, "Tenderness and kindness are not signs of weakness and despair, but manifestations of strength and resolution." That's why I keep that and will continue to work for it through Daughters for Life, because the Palestinian mother and every mother is the author of the survival story of the Palestinian people and the world. She is the heroine, the one behind our success. And in order to establish a just, safe, secure, a free world, it's the job of women's education and women's role. That's what is needed to invest and to promote in our world. And I want to finish with a story. We need all of the time, if we face any challenge, to ask why. Don't blame. Blaming is a way to escape responsibility. And the story for all of us to take with us. There is a story many years ago of an elementary teacher, because we are in an educational institution. Her name was Miss Thompson, and as she stood in front of her fifth grade class on the very first day of school, she told the children a lie. Like most teachers, she looked at her students and said that she loved them all the same. But that was impossible, because there, in the front row, slumped in his seat, was a little boy named Teddy. Miss Thompson had watched Teddy the year before and noticed that he did not play well with other children, that his clothes were messy, and that He constantly needed a bath, and Teddy could be unpleasant. It got to the point where Miss Thompson would actually take delight in marking his papers with the broad red pen, making bold X's, and then putting a big F at the top of his papers. At the school where Miss Thompson taught, she was required to review each child's past record. And she put Teddy's off until last. However, when she reviewed his file, she was in for a surprise. Teddy's first grade teacher wrote, "Teddy is a bright child. With a ready laugh, he does his work neatly and has good manners. He is a joy to be around." His second grade teacher wrote, "Teddy is an excellent student, well liked by his classmates, but he is troubled because his mother has a terminal illness, and life at home must be a struggle." His third grade teacher wrote, "His mother's death has been hard on him. He tries to do his best, but his father doesn't show much interest, and his home life will soon affect him if some steps are not taken." Teddy's fourth grade teacher wrote, "Teddy is withdrawn and does not show much interest in school. He does not have many friends and sometimes sleeps in the class." By now, Miss Thompson realized the problem, and she was ashamed of herself. She felt even worse when her students brought her Christmas presents wrapped in beautiful ribbons and bright paper, except for Teddy's. His present was clumsily wrapped in the heavy brown paper that he got from a grocery bag. Miss Thompson took pains to open it in the middle of the other presents. Some of the children started to laugh when she found a rhinestone bracelet with some of the stones missing and a bottle that was 1/4 full of perfume. But she stifled the children's laughter when she exclaimed how pretty the bracelet was. Putting it on and dabbing some of the perfume on her wrist, Teddy stayed after the school that day just long enough to say, "Miss Thompson, today you smelled just like my mom used to." After the children left, she cried for at least an hour. On that very day, she quit teaching reading arithmetic. Instead, she began to teach children. Miss Thompson paid particular attention to Teddy. As she worked with him, his mind seemed to come alive. The more she encouraged him, the faster he responded. By the end of the year, Teddy had become one of the smartest children in the class. And despite her lies that she would love all the children the same, Teddy became one of her teacher's pets. A year later, she found a note under her door from Teddy telling her that she was still the best teacher. 6 years went, and he wrote a letter that he had finished high school third in his class, and she was still the best teacher. 4 years after, she got another letter saying that while things had been tough at times, he had stayed in school, had stuck with it, and would soon graduate from college with the highest of honors. He assured her that she was the best teacher. Then 4 more years passed, and this time he explained that after he got his bachelor's degree, he decided to go a little further. The letter explained that she was still the best teacher and favorite teacher he ever had, but now his name was a little longer. The letter was signed Theodore F. Stoddard, M.D. The story doesn't end. You see, there was yet another letter that spring. Teddy said he had met this girl and was going to be married. He explained that his father had died a couple of years ago, and he was wondering if Miss Thompson might agree to sit in the place at the wedding that was usually reserved for the mother of the groom. Of course, she accepted. And guess what? She wore the bracelet. The one with several rhinestones missing, and she made sure she was wearing the perfume that Teddy remembered his mother wearing on their last Christmas. Together, they hugged each other, and he whispered in Miss Thompson's ear, "Thank you, Miss Thompson, for believing in me. Thank you so much for making me feel important and showing me that I could make a difference." Miss Thompson, with tears in her eyes, whispered back. She said, "Teddy, you have it all wrong. You were the one who taught me that I could make a difference. I didn't know how to teach until I met you. That's what is needed. This guy, if he was left, to deal with him in a superficial way, without digging deeper and asking what made him, he will be lost. And then to blame him, maybe terrorist, maybe violent, maybe full of hatred about our world, but no one is asking what made him. So we need to ask 5, 10 times why, as Miss Thompson did, and not to blame others, but to take responsibility of asking and acting. That's what is needed. That's the kind of children we need to work and to help. And in our life, we have priorities. The priority in life is not the past. The past is there to learn from it. The priority in life is the present and the future. But who is the present and the future? The present and the future are our children. What legacy do we want to inherit them? If we love them, we need to inherit them a safe, secure, a future and life. That's why I came here to you, because I believe in what are you doing. I believe in you as people. So have faith, have hope. But faith and hope without actions means nothing. We need the faith and hope to be translated into actions to make the world we want for us and others. And one can do everything, but each of us can do something. Hope each of us can leave with the message asking, what can I do to make a difference in our world? Thank you, and God bless you.
We have a microphone if there are some of you who would like to ask questions.
Thank you so much for your story and your example. You are truly an inspiration. My question has to do with the comments you made about education as being light in the darkness. Palestine and Israel are probably the two most educated societies in the entire Middle East. How do you explain, or what is missing in the educational quality and strife, or striving at education, that it seems to me that education very much opens doors for people who leave the area, but how about contributing to finding solutions? Does education actually do that, and what is missing?
Of course, education is vital, as you said, and Palestinians and Israelis, they are educated. But we must not equalize between them. We must not put them in the same basket. This is one thing. Israelis are occupiers, and Palestinians are occupied. Israelis, they have the power, and Palestinians are less powerful, but they have strength in their education. So when we can bring them together, education can influence the situation, and we need that kind of education. It's not about academic education, and I say it loudly. Any academic education which has no social impact is not education. So we need to have that academic education which is translated into social impact to cross the borders and the barriers and the walls of the academic institutions. So that's important. But for the conflict, education is needed, but mostly it's political. And it's in the hands of the political leaders and the world. And when you said it about Palestinians and Israelis, it's not the responsibility of Palestinians and Israelis only. It's the world's responsibility to put an end to this conflict, because the impact of finding a settlement to this conflict will impact the world.
Doctor, I was wondering what motivates you to forgive. Do you have a passage in the Quran? Do you have a tradition? Why not vengeance, rather? Why forgiveness?
What helped me to move forward? Of course, my faith as a Muslim, Islam, and the values of Islam to recommend, even when some people, the misunderstanding, it says, in Quran, of course, soul to soul, eye to eye, tooth with tooth, but if you forgive and endure patiently, God will reward you. That's the Quran. That's the faith. Islam is not a religion of revenge. Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, he was the most forgiver and merciful. When he was tortured and was kicked out of Mecca to leave to Medina, and when he came back, he was strong enough. And the people who kicked him out, they were fearing him. He may get revenge. And they asked him, what are you going to do with us? He said, go, you are free. So that's the faith. The faith is helpful. My life experience, and also, if I want to get revenge, is it going to return my daughters? What do I care about is my daughters. And I can keep them alive. And being here, survival, standing taller, this is a message to the perpetrator. I am not defeated. I am not broken and will never be broken.
I was wondering if you could say a few more words about the Daughters for Life Foundation.
Daughters for Life Foundation, it's a registered Canadian charity. It has been there for three, four years. We started, I said, I have to keep it, as I said, because people, they may forget. I said, even if the people, they forget, but I will never forget my daughters, and I am doing, working for it, for education of girls and women, for undergraduate and graduate education. where we select these girls to come to study in Canada, in the States, in UK, in Bangladesh, and we support some girls who are studying in their homes, in back home. So we support them. We have the first three graduate students this year with master degrees from Trent University and two from Oxford University in UK. We have five girls, they started this year, undergraduate at the New College of Florida. We have many others in Canadian universities and at the Asian University for Women in Bangladesh. And I'm expecting to have 20 girls next year. And today I discussed with the president, and we need your support. And that's the issue when the people, they ask, what can we do? This is your time to come to bring the community to the university to support this initiative to see more girls from the Middle East coming to the Eastern Mennonite University, starting here to be the ambassadors and the agents for the change. That's what I see. What can I do to help my daughters and to make the change in this world? We discussed it today, and I am hopeful in 2015, with your support, we can see a number of scholars, girls, who are coming here. You will learn from them, and they will learn from you. Because it's important in life, our enemies in this world are our ignorance, our arrogance, our greed and fear. So we need about ignorance to know ourselves and to know others. And I say to you, don't hear about the Palestinians. What are they saying? Someone to say about Palestinians or anyone else? Hear from them. Meet them. Know them. Listen to them. Not someone who is saying to you, I think of them like that. So when they come here, these girls, it changes the stereotype, the misinformation we have about each other.
How is it that you came to be a physician in Israel?
That's important. I worked in Israel before as a child, as a worker, at the age of 14, when I went to work in chicken coops and in farms. I remember it. It was the first time in my life to be away from my family for 40 days. Every day for me, it's a century. But I went to work as a physician. When I did my specialty in obstetrics and gynecology, my interest was infertility and IVF. I decided, at that time I worked in Saudi Arabia, so I said I have to go back home to be close to my mother. And personally, nothing like home. So I went back with all the lack of facilities in the Gaza Strip. I communicated with the doctors where the textbooks I used in my thesis, mostly they were from Israel. So I communicated with them. It was during the first Intifada. A Palestinian from Gaza Strip, from Jabalia camp, is communicating with Israeli doctors. And for them, Jabalia camp is an alarm. It's the birthplace of the first Intifada. It's one of the most hot points for them. I said, I have to go to meet them. And I believe health and medicine can be an engine to bridge between the people. And when I introduced myself to them, even the chairman of the department, to some of the staff, from where I am, some of them were suspicious. A Palestinian from Jabalia camp, because they saw Palestinians as workers. It's time to see Palestinians, as you said, as they are educated, as a human, as equal, as similar. And I believed in it. It took time. And I am proud of what did I do. And that's why they used to say, the Palestinian doctor. That's the brand, the stigma to say. To see me there, this is the Palestinian doctor who delivered babies, who helped us. And it sent a message to the Israeli public and the people. And that's what I made in my life to impact the lives of the other people. Because, as I said, our enemies are our ignorance of ourselves and others. We don't know each other till we meet. So we need to communicate in order to know each other and to build the trust.
Hello, doctor. I'm a student and I'm from Beijing, China. I was very interested in your book. The topic is I shall not hate. So there have one big problem between in China is like between China and Japan, because the history stuff, World War II is kind of like 20th century is a bloody century, and World War II have all kind of genocide and happened in China. So like until now, some Chinese still hate Japan. Some Japanese like they do nothing now. But we some still hate. So I was confused about you said you decide to not hate. And what's the relationship, like you said, between the hate and angry? So I'm still confused about that.
As I said, anger is acute, because in medicine, the type of diseases, there is acute diseases. Common cold is an acute disease. It comes in 2-3 days and subsides, even with or without a treatment. That's anger. I can make you angry, and you can flare up, and then it's a wave. It comes and goes. That's anger, and we all become angry. Then we are released. But hatred, as the hatred you are talking about, and this proves that hatred is contagious. It passes through generations, as you said, from World War II. Till now, there are Chinese who hate Japanese because of the exposure of their parents, their families, to what happened. So it's contagious, vertical spread and horizontal spread. So that's important. In order to overcome that, you need certain curriculums, education, to overcome that hatred and to heal, rehabilitate the hearts, the souls, which are impacted with hatred. Because I say to people, it takes generations. Because the wounds, the spiritual wounds, are not easy to heal. The physical wounds, I can stitch it and I heal it. But the spiritual, the minds, the souls, it takes generations, and you need to work on it in order to heal. It needs rehabilitation. And that depends on, of course, the resilience and the education.
You said killing when you kill the world. So my question is, how to act to change the living condition of a community when the only option that we have is the war? My question is, how to act to change the living condition of a community when the only option that we have is war?
Yeah, I said, eye to eye, punishment is needed in this world. Accountability to actions, because we need to have order in this world. In order to have order, each of us should be accountable to his or her own acts. And there should be a just system for accountability That's important. But as I said, eye to eye, as Mahatma Gandhi said, the world will be blind. There is another alternative. And that's what my daughter, Bisan, she said, to treat violence with violence doesn't solve any problem. Hatred with hatred, anger with anger, it's not going to work. So instead of that, how can we work to prevent anyone to take responsibility about their actions? And even if there is a victim or a perpetrator, someone who did bad things. In this world, we need to forgive. But it's important, why all of the time we ask the victim to forgive the perpetrator? Why not to encourage the perpetrator to take responsibility and to admit he did it and to apologize? That's the kind of forgiveness which has a meaning. It comes from strength. Once the perpetrator to take responsibility to say, I did it, I apologize, I am sorry for that. At that moment, the forgiveness you give me, it's strong, it has a meaning. But not someone to come to you, I did harm to you, and they say to you, because I am stronger than you, please forgive him. It's by force. It has no meaning. It has no taste. It has no value. So we need to move forward and all to be accountable to our acts in this world. That's why justice is needed in this world, and no one is above justice. All are equal under.
The front row is winning the question lottery. There's going to be one more after this.
Hi. When your daughter passed away, you were in your country, right? Why you didn't think about come to Canada or far from Palestine, like before they passed away? Why you didn't think about it?
I run a normal life. I am happy in my life. I was working in Israel, commuting. The world is open for me everywhere I go. I worked in Israel. I worked in Afghanistan, in Yemen, in Kenya. The world, you know, to work with many international organizations, I don't find any challenge of finding a job. And I feel it's my home. I want to be there with my people. But I decided to work outside after I lost my wife. I lost my main support. And I leave my children. To whom I leave them? Because in my work in Israel, I leave Sunday morning and come back Thursday. I can't leave them. They are my life. They are my children. To whom? Because the children are the beauty of life. They are the life. They give us life. And that's one of the messages I learned I want you to take. I used to travel, even when I studied at Harvard or other places, because I can't take my children or my wife with me as a Palestinian with the Palestinian passport, with the visas, where I am still struggling with it. I used to travel. But if I know the future, I will never do that. So I say to you, don't say tomorrow. Even in my life these days, I don't like to say tomorrow. If I can do it now, I will do it now. Tomorrow is not in my hand. So don't say tomorrow. Spend as much as you can of your time with the people you love. Hug them, share with them, eat with them, talk to them. That's important. So after I lost my wife, I sent my CV end of November to my friends. In a couple of weeks, I received two offers. One was from the University of Toronto, and one was from the University of Harvard. I said, where can I go? I discussed it with my children. I know Harvard. It's a prestigious university for me to be professor at Harvard, but my life is devoted for my children. What is the good place for my children? I made many mistakes in my life. But one of my wisest decisions when I choose to go to Canada. It's a good place for the children. It was supposed to go before the war. But I said, I have to wait, because they were at school after the first semester. Then the war started, and the tragedy happened. At that moment, I decided I am not leaving at all. I have to stay there. But I discussed it with my children, and they said, let us try. And it's not where are you, it's who are you. What do you carry in your heart? I say to people, all of the people they carry or they live in countries, and they live at houses. But for me as a Palestinian, my country, Palestine, lives inside me. My home lives inside me and moves with me. I hope one day to land and to live in that country and at that home, the free, independent one. That's the only dream remaining in my life, and I wish my children enjoy and feel that dream.
What about EMU?
So, sorry?
Can you think about EMU to move here? Yeah. Just
about?
Yeah, about EMU, Eastern Mennonite University. Can you be professor here?
I say to you, I can give everywhere. I give everywhere, and I discussed. I would love. I come. It's not life for me. It's not fun. As I said, I am accountable in my life just to God and to my daughters. And I want to do every possible thing good for them through good deeds and through sending them prayers and the blessings. When I teach, communicate, travel, and sacrifice, this is a great blessing for my daughters. And that's what I am committed to. And I said it today, I am ready to come here once a year to teach a course for 1 week. I can't spend more because my children are my life, unless to have my children with me.
You mentioned that a lot of the women that you're sending out in the Daughters of Life Foundation are going outside of Palestine to attend school. Do you equally value the education of the universities within Palestine? Do you empower women to kind of take that route as well?
Yeah, we have two programs. Some of these girls in Palestine, in Israel, in Jordan, in Syria, in Lebanon, in Egypt, because it's for girls from the Middle East. And I hope in 2 years to make it an international foundation for girls from every part in this world. No difference. For the girls from the Middle East who are studying there, we give them financial awards to cover their tuition fees annually. But for the girls who are studying outside, we give them full scholarships. We cover the tuition fees, the residence, the housing, the food, the books, and the round trip annually. So we select the good girls to be good representative of the mission of the foundation.
Thank you so much. Thanks to all of you for coming tonight. I remind you there are books here for sale, and he will be happy to autograph them for you. Again, thank you all so much for coming, and thank you.